This podcast is one of the many good ones on the Self Defense Radio Network.
Hi, this is Jeff in Saxey, Texas. And just like Bob, I'm a tactical guy and I like a tactical podcast.
Jeff, wait a minute. That's practical guy and practical podcast.
Oh, never mind.
Hey folks, I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. This is episode number 431 of the Handgun World Podcast. Just a practical show done by a practical guy like me. Let's get right into it. The major topics I want to talk about today is a lot of listener emails. I don't get a chance to respond to emails very much. So when I do, like right now, when I have the time to do that, I want to thank you very much, all of you. If you want to email me, bob@handgunworld.com, or you can use handgunworld@gmail.com. Also, I love voicemails, 210-646-1727. The first email that I want to talk about comes from Aaron in Wisconsin, my home state. Aaron says, Bob, thanks for your podcast. I live in Milwaukee, and just about every day on the news, we hear about armed robbers or carjackings. And listening to your podcast has given me some ideas. Says he's looking to make his first purchase of a handgun. Aaron, let me say this. Just be patient about making your first purchase of a handgun. And when I say be patient, I mean try a lot of them out there. I would imagine in the greater Milwaukee area, there are some shooting ranges that have rental guns. Rent a lot of guns, shoot them, about 25 to 50 rounds each one. That'll give you a good feel for what is going to work for you. Some recommendations that you can find easily to rent: a Smith & Wesson Shield 9mm. That's such a great all-around gun. Yes, by the way, you could use a Smith & Wesson Shield for home defense if you want to, as long as you set it up correctly and you practice for those scenarios. It may not be ideal, but it's a great gun that you could use for personal defense at home and to conceal carry, Aaron, if that's what you're going to do. Of course, a Glock 19, check out the Smith & Wesson M&Ps, any of the Springfield XD models, the compacts or the full size. And another one you might want to check out there, if budget is a concern and you want to get a real good gun, the Canik. I guess it's actually pronounced Canik or something like that. Canik. There's been a recall on those, so be careful when you purchase those. Find out if that gun is subject to recall or not. But I've heard some pretty good things about that pistol. And don't forget Ruger's. Ruger makes some nice semi-automatics out there. Glock 43s, I can highly recommend. Since you said it's your first purchase of a handgun, I might make some people angry when I say this, but I would not recommend the 1911 for your first purchase of a handgun. I think the learning curve is a little bit too high for new people. Besides that, if this is going to be something that you're going to carry and carry a lot, like 8 or 10 hours a day or 12 hours a day, there are a lot of people that just do not choose, especially if they're new to this, they do not choose to carry a heavy 1911. I have nothing against 1911s, ladies and gentlemen. I do not hate 1911s, so please don't send me that kind of email. I think a 1911 is a fantastic gun if, and here's a big if you're willing to train with it all the time and only train with a 1911. And also, if you're willing to carry a pretty heavy gun with relatively low capacity, considering what is out there on the market. Smith & Wesson M&P 9 Compact, for example, or a Glock 26. Both of those guns are far lighter and hold a lot more ammunition, even a lot more than a 9mm 1911. Now, there are people out there that carry and conceal a double-stack heavy steel 1911, but those are few and far between. I'm a big believer in balancing carryability with capacity. Aaron, you might also want to check out the Walther PPS M2. I have one and I really like that gun. Really like the trigger. There is decent accessories for it. It fits my hand very well. It's a good shootable gun. Easy to carry. Relatively easy to carry. Any of the single stack polymer 1911s, if you're going to make your first purchase of a handgun. You know, back in the day, I used to say, get a Glock 19. That's because back in the day, as far as a first handgun purchase, you know, when I first started doing this back in 2009, a Glock 19 or an M&P Compact or a Springfield XD Compact, those were about pretty much your good choices if you wanted a decent capacity striker-fired 9mm first gun. Now there's a whole lot more that's being offered out there. So check all that stuff out, Aaron, and thank you very much for your email. Okay, let's see. The next email I want to talk about comes from Doug. Thank you, Doug. He says, hey, if anybody complains about using the link to your Amazon store because they don't want to take too many extra steps, he said one suggestion is he has the Amazon app downloaded and it'll do all the browsing of the items from the app. He says, after he's added all of the items to the cart, to the shopping cart, he says, I open the phone browser and browse to your site to access the Amazon store link. I click on the link and log in, and the items that are in the cart are already there, ready to purchase. Wow, thank you, Doug. I appreciate that. You know, that's one of the ways you can support this show is if you're going to do shopping on Amazon, get the app, like Doug says, or even if you have a Amazon Prime account or whatever, you can still go to handgunworld.com. I know it's a couple of extra steps, but if you don't want to do that, try Doug's method. Then that way you don't have to spend any extra money, but Amazon chooses to support me for driving business towards them. Okay, a couple of other emails. This is some stuff that you're going to like. As you know that I'm by December 1st or episode 450, whichever comes first, probably December 1st, is going to come before episode 450. I'm going to take a break, probably 4 to 6 weeks off, probably the entire month of December and part of January. I'm going to take a little break from the Handgun World podcast. No, I am not going to stop doing the show. I just need to kind of recharge my batteries, and since it'll be the end of the year, I need to reflect on some things and think about what's the next chapter of my life going to be like. So I've asked for people, if they have some information and they would like to basically be a guest podcaster, just record a segment of info that you want to talk about regarding guns, handguns, self-defense. And I've asked people, just worry about recording the topic matter. I'll take care of the introductions and the conclusions and editing and uploading it to the show to make it available. So Tim is going to do one. And, he says he's got two ideas. Setting realistic personal shooting performance standards. Wow. You know, that is amazing. When I first learned how to sell, I'm in sales. Most of you know that's my profession. Back in about 1986, you know, I had a terrific sales trainer. And one of the things he used to talk about was setting realistic personal sales goals. It's the same with shooting, isn't it, folks? Setting realistic personal standards. Realistic is the most important word there. So I'm interested to hear what Tim has to say about that. And then he wants to talk about the resurgence of double action, single action guns. Haha, there you go. The resurgence of the DASA, double action, single action guns. So thank you, Tim. Looking forward to that. So while I'm on break, I will be posting all of these, and then you'll get a chance to listen to some great listeners of this show that I'm sure have some very good information to share. You know, it's important that you as the listener take part in this. This is your show too, just as much as it is mine. Greg from California also says, he says, I don't know much about posting podcasts, but I got some recording equipment. That's good. So he's probably going to be one of my guest podcasters as well. He said, I might even have a different perspective as a law enforcement officer and a CCW instructor and a 4-H shooting sports instructor and resident behind, I love this, and a resident behind the granola curtain of California. Oh, Greg, that's great for a good laugh. Thank you very much. So he's going to contribute some material. Again, he has a different perspective. He's a law enforcement officer. It'll be good to hear that perspective, Greg, especially from behind that granola curtain. I'm still laughing. Thank you. Another listener named Cliff. Now, he's got some interesting things to say. I think he's probably going to be emailing to me some audio for as a guest podcaster while I'm out. One of the things that Cliff said, this is interesting, he said, when I began working security and doing police volunteer work, I found officers carrying a primary gun, two extra mags, less lethal tools like pepper spray, baton, taser, and 1 to 2 pair of handcuffs. SWAT officers carried heavier firepower, heavier body armor, and usually had more flexibility with the sidearms that they carry. Most of them carrying P229s, Glock 22 or 17s, Smith & Wesson M&Ps, and that was between about 2005 and 2009. He said, basically, he now sees more officers wearing Molly gear, carrying three extra magazines for their pistol, and some carrying 1 or 2 AR magazines. Aha, interesting. The other defensive tools usually remain the same. Some may not have a taser or choose not to carry OC spray. See, that's interesting. You know, it's kind of an evolution. And I've talked about many times, I personally don't think that just a regular civilian that needs to use their handgun in self-defense, I personally don't think that there's much of a likelihood at all of you getting the opportunity to reload that handgun and stay in the fight. Now, for law enforcement or military, well, that's different. So it's interesting, police officers now carrying 3 extra magazines. 3. Quite interesting. That tells you that they see the need from their perspective with basically the work that they are doing. I'm not saying don't carry an extra magazine, and I'm not saying that it's not important. What I'm saying is if your gun carries 16 rounds before you have to reload, learn to win the fight with 16 rounds or 18 or 20 rounds, whatever you have. If you have a gun that carries 16 rounds of 9mm, for example, and you have a backup 17-round extra magazine, you might think, oh, well, 16 plus 17? Hey, I got 33 rounds. Yeah, technically, you have 33 rounds, but the likelihood of you getting to reload and put in that extra 17-round mag, the statistics show it. It hardly, hardly ever happens. Learn to win that fight with the 16 rounds that you have in the gun, or whatever it is. Learn that the reload is mostly going to be in case, yes, here it comes, wait for it, in case you have a bad malfunction. And you have to insert a fresh magazine, because maybe the magazine, or a combination of the magazine and the ammo that's in that magazine, perhaps may be causing your problem, as it does with a lot of semi-automatic guns, and yes, as it does with Glocks and M&Ps, they jam. I've seen them in courses and in training classes and in competition matches. I've seen them malfunction. They do. People lie if they say that their Glock never malfunctions. They're either lying or they've never shot that Glock very much. I mean, yeah, you could shoot 100 rounds through any kind of a polymer pistol, any kind of a good polymer pistol out there. You could shoot 100 rounds and have no malfunctions. And then you can be a keyboard warrior and get on the internet and say, my gun has never malfunctioned. I've shot it 100 rounds, no malfunctions. Now, keyboard warrior, get away from your computer. Go to a two-day, 800-round or 600-round class, or go to a three-day, 1,000-round class, and then see if your gun malfunctions. And sometimes the gun malfunctions not because of the gun, but because of you, the shooter. Under stress and a lot of different scenarios and a lot of different training drills and things like that, you may cause the gun to malfunction. Then you can go back to your keyboard, and then you can enhance your keyboard warrior knowledge by telling us about what happened with your gun when you trained with it for two straight days and shot it 800 rounds. I got to tell you, I've had no malfunctions in one of my Glock 19s through three or four different classes. And I've also taken just recently a four-hour class at KR Training near Austin, Texas, and I had two malfunctions with the same gun. Guess what? It wasn't the gun, it was me. Okay, one time for some reason, I don't know why, but I kept pushing down on the slide release lever, and so the slide was not locking open after the first shot because it was me that kept pushing it down during every time that I fired the gun. So there you go. Now, if you have a nasty, nasty malfunction where a tap and a rack won't clear it, then you're going to have to get that bad magazine out of there, get that bad ammo out of there, and then take the fresh, good magazine full of good ammo that you've been carrying on your belt along with your concealed carry gun. All this time, take it out, stick it in there, rack the slide, and get back in the fight, if that's what you have to do. And hopefully, you're doing all that at least behind cover or behind concealment where the bad guy can't see you. All right, I think this would be a good time just to take a brief break, and I'll be right back with some more listener emails.
Well, yeah, it's getting tough out there. Yeah, no doubt. I work in home invasions, mostly. Some murder, occasional rape, and I'm a huge advocate of gun control. Absolutely. Competition is stiff, and it doesn't help that every time I kick in a door or smash a window, that I face the possibility of being shot and killed. Listen, the fact is, allowing citizens to own guns creates a hostile work environment for me and my associates. No one should have to work under those conditions. I say make them all illegal. Absolutely. Make all gun ownership illegal. I mean, I break the law for a living. I'm a professional, so it doesn't really bother me. I mean, but personally, knowing that most homeowners don't have guns, that would make me a lot more comfortable, more confident, and it would surely increase productivity. No doubt. This is no only doubt. A threat if you
let you listen. Your local violent criminals work hard and put their lives on the line every time they attempt to murder, rape, abduct, or assault a member of the citizenry. They desperately need your help. With your support, there may finally come a day when a violent criminal can have his way with you or someone you love without the fear, anxiety, and stress caused by knowing there's a possibility his victim might be armed. Please show your support by voting for stronger anti-gun legislation, because criminals prefer unarmed citizens.
Okay, next, James writes to me and says he wants to slightly disagree, and that's okay. Hey, I love this kind of stuff. I love comments, or, you know, voicemails or emails. And if you want to slightly disagree with me, that's great. I do not know everything. I'm not like some hosts that do this kind of thing to think that they know it all, right? They got the answers. Yeah, not me. I don't think that way. So James says, I disagree slightly, but I think we kind of end up with the same result. He said, Bob, you say the primary reason to carry an extra magazine is for malfunctions. He said, while I believe the primary reason is still for a fresh reload for two reasons. Huh. Okay, here's James' point of view. First, yes, reloads seem rarely needed in a civilian shooting. But just for argument, let's say that a reload might be helpful in 0.5% to 1% of the cases, like every couple hundred shooting events. My training might be dated, but our first malfunction drill is tap, roll, and rack for type 1 and type 2 malfunctions. And I don't think it's dated, James. That's, you know, I teach that too, and a lot of people teach that too, that type of technique also today. So, rock on. He says, so that does not require a second magazine at all, but for type 3 malfunctions, a second magazine is indeed helpful, but not necessary. Yes, that's what I've said before. James says, I'd say in a quality pistol, a type 3 malfunction should be much more rare than about a 1 in 200 event, or maybe even like 1 in 500. Second point would be to just paraphrase Jeff Cooper. A paraphrase. You won't likely need a reload, but it just seems silly to stand around with a half-empty gun after a fight. Good old Jeff Cooper. And, James, you know, that's kind of a... I take that email as kind of another look at it. Yes, we do agree on some things, but you've kind of injected some other things to think about in there. And I'm glad you did. Thanks for sending that over because... You know, I love to hear the different perspectives on everything. Okay, Chauncey from Hawaii sent me a really good email. I'm not going to read this email word for word. It's a long one, but I'm going to paraphrase it. First, he starts by offering condolences on the passing of my wife. Thank you, Chauncey. I appreciate that. All of you listeners out there who have supported me in everything. And also supported my wife and prayed for her and prayed for me and my son. I thank you so much. It's been awesome. And I miss her terribly, and so does my son. We move on. We move on. That's what God wants us to do, is move on and enjoy life. I enjoy life to the fullest now, folks. Every day I'm thankful. Every day when my feet get out of bed and hit the floor, I pray a prayer of thanks. Because I now have another day. Please don't take a day or an hour or even a minute for granted. Okay? Chauncey says, I wanted to comment about one of your listeners' questions about the validity of the first shot. In other words, I've said, he who makes the first shot on the bad guy, or whoever makes the first shot with a good hit is likely to be the winner of the fight. Chauncey says, no, while one can never guarantee stoppage because of a first shot hit, he thought the discussion was a bit academic. Okay, he says, after all, what's the alternative? Second shot hits? Just a thought. I'm not quite sure where he's going with that. But let me just say, I think that there is a huge validity of a first shot hit on the bad guy. Now, I know there's plenty of stories out there of people having to fire multiple shots to be able to stop the fight, which is, again, back to the capacity argument. Carry the gun that has the largest capacity that you can feel comfortable carrying and carry all the time. Now, some people say, well, you know, Bob, hey, it takes multiple shots. So how can you say that the first shot is typically going to be the one? I'm not saying all the time. You know, this myth about one shot stops is just that. It's generally a myth. But think about it. If you got shot and it was a good hit in a vital area, think that might slow you down a bit? Now, you better have the techniques to be able to get out, to be able to get off the X, to be able to put yourself in motion, to be able to defend yourself hand-to-hand if you need to, after maybe you fired that first or second shot, because, you know, the worst thing that can happen to you in a gunfight is to get shot, is to get shot or shoot yourself. That's the worst thing that can happen to you if you ever find yourself in a gunfight. But, you know, as Chauncey says, you know, what's the alternative? Second shot hits? Yeah, well, I don't know if this discussion is a bit academic or not. I mean, it's something to consider. It's something to be thinking about anyway. And that's why I really liked the training that I took over at KR Training a few weeks ago, because it emphasized the importance of being able to efficiently draw from the holster and make one or two shots real quick that are good hits in a vital area. And speeding that up to where you can do it as fast as you can and still be accurate enough to make the good hits. So, but anyway, Chauncey, thanks for that email. It's all this stuff is, you know, very thought-provoking. People that send in emails like this or voicemails, you stir up a lot of thought, which is good. That's really good. I want to encourage you to be a critical thinker in this, because this is all about who can think and analyze and react the best and the most efficient. That's going to be the winner of the fight. Would you agree? Okay, next email I want to talk about comes from Darren. Darren says, "Hey, Bob, I'm a new subscriber. Thank you very much. And just started listening to your episode about the Glock 43. After renting and shooting both the G43 and the Shield, I couldn't agree more with your assessment, calling them the two best single-stack 9mm pistols on the market." Yeah, that's what I believe. In terms of pricing, all-around shootability, durability, reliability, concealability, and effectiveness, yeah, I think either a Glock 43 or a Shield, probably throw in there a Walther PPS M2 or a Ruger LC9S. He says, "They both felt wonderful and were far more fun to shoot than the Kel-Tec PF9 I used to own." Yeah, I've shot a Kel-Tec PF9. They're not much fun. He said, "The accuracy was surprising on both." He said, "I'm buying the G43 simply because I have owned a number of Glocks and are more familiar with them." Yeah, see, and if you have a number of M&Ps and you're more familiar with them, then maybe the Shield fits you both. I happen to have both the Glock 43 and the Shield. Yeah, I shoot them about the same. Each one is, in terms of accuracy and in terms of reliability, I will say, hey, I have put a lot of rounds through my Smith & Wesson Shield. A lot. And no malfunctions. And no malfunctions that even I caused. Same with my Glock 43. Can't say that about a G42. The G42, when I first got it, had some real issues. And I sent it back to Glock. And Glock reworked some things. It was kind of vague what they did. But ever since I got the Glock 42 back from Glock, it's been fantastic. But I bought a Glock 42 back when, I think it was like about 3 or 4 months after they were available. But anyway, Darren, thanks. That's a good email. I appreciate that. That was nice of you to send that in. Congratulations. I assume that by now you got that Glock 43. If not, send in another email or call a voicemail. Tell us how it's going. Voicemail number, by the way, folks, is 210-646-1727, 210-646-1727. Folks, you got to remember, I take an everyday guy's perspective. This is the way I look at this kind of stuff. That's what I am. I'm just a family man. I'm just a salesman by trade, and I love it. I love the business. I would never think I'd do anything else. You know, guns and the podcast and a little training and things like that, that's just always been my source of fun. And I share my passion and my source of fun with you on this podcast. And I appreciate you guys listening. And I'm going to be talking a lot about, coming up pretty soon, I'm going to be talking about a lot of training that I'm taking, because as you know, for the rest of 2017 and all of 2018, I'm not going to be teaching any classes. I want to become a better shooter. I want to become a better defensive shooter and a better competition shooter. And I want to tell you about it as I go on this journey and take a lot of different training classes from a lot of different people and learn a lot of different styles of shooting and figure out which works best for me. And I'm going to put it all together and tell you what works best for me. And maybe you'll benefit from it. So that leads me to say that next weekend there will not be a new episode, because I'll be at the Gun Rights Policy Conference in Dallas. I plan on getting a lot of interviews with people there. So the week after next weekend, the weekend after, you're going to be able to get a lot of good audio content from me. And I think you're going to be enjoying that, because the Gun Rights Policy Conference is going to be a lot of people in the firearms industry that are going to be there collectively getting together to keep our rights and to win back a lot of the rights that we lost. And I'll be able to hopefully interview with them. I'm also going to be on a panel at AMCON, which is the day before Gun Rights Policy Conference, talking about podcasting and things like that. I'll let you know a little bit about what I learned there. So I'm looking forward to it. Going to travel up there with Ben Branham. We're going to carpool, go up there together, and it's going to be a lot of fun. About a 4 hour and 45 to 5 hour drive from where we live in San Antonio, assuming there's not a lot of traffic and construction, which that's a bad assumption to make, because there's probably going to be traffic and construction. Okay, well, that wraps up this episode. It's relatively short, but I want to say thank you to all of you. If you like what you hear on this show and this show benefits you, as you know, with the exception of one, Concealment Solutions, I don't have any other sponsors. You know, I got to talk about Concealment Solutions, because their holsters are phenomenal. Check them out, concealmentsolutions.com. I own about 8 or 9 of their holsters. I use them daily, and I just think that they're some of the best holsters on the market. Concealmentsolutions.com, the coupon code HANDGUNWORLD will qualify you for a 10% discount when you check out. Handgun World, one word, at Concealment Solutions. When you check out, put that in there. It'll save you 10% off. Then that way they'll know that I'm sending them business, and they'll keep sponsoring the show. But there are other ways for you to support the show. Like I mentioned earlier, if you don't want to spend any extra money, buy through my Handgun World affiliate class. More importantly, Ben Branham and I have great videos on the Shooters Club. ShootersClubMembers.com. Something like, I think we're at 74 or 75 videos. They're awesome. You know, a lot of it comes from our classes that we teach. Some of it is just Ben and I at the range teaching things and putting it on video. It does not replace live training, but boy, it sure helps to give you ideas on what to practice and to reinforce maybe what you've already learned, and even some dry fire practice and things like that. For only $8 a month or $75 a year, you can become a member. And hurry up, because I am donating everything that I earn from the Shooters Club for the entire month of September. There are still a lot of people out there that need relief from the damage to their lives done by the hurricanes, both of them, Hurricane Harvey and Irma. So I'll be donating to those causes, because people need that. So I'm not going to keep any of the money I earn. I am going to help people in need, and I want you to help me do that. So I would appreciate it if you would. With all that said, folks, thanks for listening. I will be, again, in 2 weeks talking to you, and you'll be hearing some great interviews from the Gun Rights Policy Conference. And if you're going to be listening live, I know Paul at the Polite Society podcast, he's going to be broadcasting some of it live. You might be hearing me live at the event, maybe, or even if you're going to be listening, you know, to some of the recordings from AMCON. AMCON, the day before, is not going to be live, but there'll be recordings. I'm sure you'll probably hear me on some of that stuff, too. Maybe I'll even see you at the Gun Rights Policy Conference next weekend. So, I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Remember, evil does not exist in the holster. It exists in the hearts of men and women. Please do like me. Read your Bible every day and shoot straight and shoot safe. And I'll talk to you next time. Goodbye. Introduction and conclusion music by Ozark Revival. Check it out at www.ozarkrevival.com.